It's ready.
And the Spirit prompts me that you need to write a book that teaches principles of truth.
I should have made a
joke. And I'm so excited to write my wife, but I'm not enough to get a book. Wants me to write a book where we have a story that teaches through a fiction story. And she's like, you're going to write a book of fiction. And I was like, she's like, you've never even read a book of fiction. So I've read thousands of books, but all nonfiction. All the books that I've written up to that point were nonfiction books. And I said, well, if God wants me to write a novel, I can write a novel. And my wife then responded to me and said, if you write a novel, it will increase my belief in miracles. So this book is that miracle, where we took a story, a thriller, and we tied in the principles of the founding of the United States of America, the principles of the Constitution, throughout the book. And I dedicated the book to my wife, and she is the main character. So Paula is the main character in the book. So today we're going to share a few of the stories from the founding of America and the establishment of the Constitution. And first I'd like to share where the title of the book comes from. Preserve, Protect, Defend is the oath of office taken by the President of the United States. It reads in part, I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will do the best of my ability to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. We'll start on July 4th, 1776. As fighting had already broken out with Great Britain, and they were meeting to decide whether to sign the Declaration of Independence to officially declare themselves independent nation. As they gathered in Assembly Hall in Philadelphia, a few of the words that were written in that Declaration of Independence are these. By the authority of the good people of these colonies, we solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are of right, ought to be free and independent states. And for the support of this declaration, and with a firm reliance on the providence, on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honors. As they gathered in this room, they sealed the door so that it would be private. But they set a young man outside the door, and there was an elderly man that waited on the bell tower. They said, when a decision has been made, they would notify the boy if it had been accepted, and then he was to tell the man to ring the bell. So as they gather and they're discussing the Declaration of Independence, it is said that John Hancock said to Benjamin Franklin, we must hang together. And in response, Benjamin Franklin says, surely, we must hang together, or we will all hang separately. For what they were about to do was treason. And signing their name to that declaration would make them traitors, with the penalty of death. And that death usually came by hanging, or by putting your head on a block and chopping the head off with an axe. As they were discussing this penalty for being a traitor, there's what's now recorded as the speech of the unknown patriot. And these are a few of the words that were spoken. It said, the words of that parchment can never die. They may pour our blood, and yet from every drop that dies the axe, a new champion of freedom will spring into birth. The words of this declaration will live in the world long after our bones are dust. They will speak hope and freedom. Sign that parchment. Sign if in the next moment that rope is about your neck. Sign if in the next moment the hell halls ring with the clash of the falling axe. Sign by all your hopes in life or death, as men, as husbands, as fathers, as brothers. Sign your name to that parchment or be accursed forever. Sign, and not only for yourself, but for all ages. For that parchment will be the textbook of freedom and the rights of men. God has given America to be free. The voice of God speaks. Let there be light again. I implore you to remember this truth. God has given America to be free. I would beg you to sign that parchment for the sake of those millions whose very breath is now hushed in intense expectation as they look to you. They said after this speech, as they began to sign the Declaration of Independence. And then it was unanimously accepted. And after each had signed, they gave notice to the boy outside the door. They said, tell the man to ring. When this man went to the tower, they said he had doubts. He said, they will never do it. He knew the consequences for each of those people and their families if they signed that declaration. He hoped they would, but he doubted. But he sat there and waited. And he was filled with joy as that voice said, ring the bell. And it says that he rang it 100 times, proclaiming liberty to the land and the inhabitants thereof. I was blessed to serve as a missionary for the Lord Jesus Christ in the islands of Hawaii. I learned many valuable lessons as I served there. And one of the Hawaiian Kumu teachers said, whenever you're faced with a decision, you should look at the 7 generations before and the 7 generations after. And this is something you see all throughout the founding of the United States of America. They weren't doing it for them. They knew their lives would be much worse as a result of signing that declaration. But they did it for their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and for the millions yet unborn. They did it for you and me so that we now enjoy the freedom of this great United States of America. So again, as we're faced with choices, we think about those generations before us and those generations will follow us and how our decisions will impact those who went before and those who will come after. Now, the signing of the Declaration was just the beginning. The Revolutionary War was 8.5 years. It was one of the longest wars in our history. If we had a similar battle today, there would be more than 3 million Americans killed. I'd like to share one story from the Revolutionary War that takes place on December 31st, 1776. And a sergeant in the army recorded this. He said, our men were without shoes or other comfortable clothing. And as traces of our march toward Princeton, the ground was literally marked with the blood of the soldiers' feet. On the last day of December, 1776, the time for which I and most of my regiment had enlisted expired. Washington called the regiment into formation and urged them to re-enlist. The drums beat, and Washington called for volunteers to stay and step forward. Not a man turned out. The soldiers were worn down with fatigue. Their hearts were fixed on home and the comforts of domestic circles. And it was hard to forego the anticipation and pleasures of society with their family and friends.
Washington rode away. But then stopped. Turned his horse around and came back. It's recorded that he said this, "My brave fellows, you have done all I have asked you to do, and more than could be reasonably expected. But your country is at stake, your wives, your house, all that you hold dear. You have worn yourself out with fatigue and hardship, but we know not how to spare you. If you will consent to stay 1 month longer, you will render that service to the cause of liberty and to your country. The present is the crisis which is to decide our destiny." The drums beating second time. The soldiers felt the force of the appeal. One said to another, "I will remain if you will." Others remarked, "We cannot go home under such circumstances." A few stepped forward, and following their example, immediately almost all followed. There's many brave men and women who fought to establish the great freedoms that we now enjoy. The majority of the deaths during the Revolutionary War were one of the highest rates of casualty. It was among those who were taken prisoners of war by the British. The British had ships off of New York where they would put these prisoners that they had captured during the war. It is estimated that about 70% of those who were in these prison ships died during the Revolution. They were treated in the most brutal manner. One of the soldiers, who says, when he was taken to the ship, he asked for a piece of paper that he might write his family to know that he was still alive. And the British soldier took out his sword and drove it through his shoulder. He said, "There's your pen and paper." He received no treatment, was thrown in the hold of the ship with thousands of other prisoners. They were packed in the holds of those ships so tight that at night they could only turn if in all unison they would turn in unison together. They would lock them in the hold of the ship at night, and in the morning they would open and call down and say, "Rebel, turn out your dead." That it was impossible to sleep with the sounds of the dead and dying. And so each morning, they would take those who hadn't survived the night, and they would row the boat to shore, and they would bury them in shallow graves. And they said as they would bury those, from that day they would see the remains of the others, thousands who had been buried, who had now been exposed from the waves of the ocean. It's estimated that over 17,000 Americans died among those prison ships. They would give those prisoners an option to be set free if they would deny the cause of liberty and declare their allegiance to Great Britain. It's recorded that there was 275 that were given this offer, or they would be hanged. Not one of those men denied the cause of freedom. And each would rather hang in support of the cause of freedom and liberty than declare allegiance to Great Britain. In 1780, there was a writing from those who were in the prison ship that survived. I'd like to share with you those words. said, if you are victorious and our country emerges free and independent from the contest in which she is now engaged, but the end of which we are not permitted to see, bury us in her soil and engrave our names on the monument you shall erect over our bones as victims who willingly surrendered their lives as a portion of the price paid for the liberties, for your liberties. And our departed spirits will never murmur nor regret the sacrifice we made to obtain for you the blessings you enjoy. Well, a monument was made to these people. It is now in, it's a monument in New York City, in Brooklyn, a large monument. And they gathered the bones from the shores where the prison ships had been. One described the scene that as you looked up those shores, they said the skulls were more numerous than pumpkins in a pumpkin patch in the fall. So they gathered up the remains of those thousands who had given their lives in the cause of liberty and freedom. And they buried them and built the monument. The plaque at the base of that monument says this: in memory of the patriotic American soldiers who endured untold suffering and died on the British prison ships during the Revolutionary War, their remains lie buried in the crypt at the base of this monument. Just as we looked on, as the unborn to the great patriots who signed the Declaration of Independence. Now these great patriots look down from heaven and rejoice in the freedom we now enjoy. Well, I'll share a little humorous story from one of the survivors of the prison ships, Ethan Allen. He spent 2 years and 8 months. Suffering all manners of cruelty and punishments. And following the Revolutionary War and the treaty, he had opportunity to go to Great Britain. And while he was there, there was still some animosity between the, you know, Americans and the Britons, and they were making fun of him as, you know, they would just, you know, think that the Americans were just these country bumpkins, you know, they were unsophisticated, and they were razzing a little bit, and they had also put in the outhouse, they had put a picture of George Washington as a way of kind of to disrespect Ethan Allen and the other Americans that were there. Well, during their time together, Ethan Allen did go and use the outhouse, and when he came back, several minutes passed and he didn't say anything about the picture. So they finally brought it up. They said, well, what did you think about that picture of George Washington in the outhouse? And Ethan Allen responded, he says, I thought it was a great placement for General George Washington because there's nothing that will make an Englishman crack faster than the sight of General Washington. Well, now we'll go on to the Constitutional Convention. So following the Revolutionary War, 8.5 years of fighting, over 1% of the American population giving their lives
They had the 55 men gathered in Philadelphia at the Constitutional Convention. The Articles of Confederation were inadequate, and they knew to be the strong, enduring nation that they needed to create a constitution. In September 1787, those 55 men gathered. It was time for them to decide if they were going to sign the Constitution. But a lot of the delegates were unhappy. There had been debate back and forth. And as they were making these final deliberations, and it seemed that there were some who would not sign for this reason or that, Benjamin Franklin stood and delivered a passionate speech. He was known as a great orator. And he stood and he said in part, "I confess that I do not entirely approve of the Constitution at present. For when you assemble a number of men to have the advantage of their joint wisdom, you inevitably assemble with them all their prejudice, their passions, their errors of opinion, their local interests, and their selfish views. From such an assembly can a perfect production be expected? It therefore astonishes me, sir, to find this system approaching so near to perfection as it does, and I think it will astonish our enemies. I hope, therefore, that for our own sakes, as a part of the people, and for the sake of our posterity, we shall act heartily and unanimously in recommending this Constitution." Following Benjamin Franklin's speech, people began going to sign the Constitution. As people were signing, Benjamin Franklin was sitting next to James Madison. James Madison recorded that he then had a discussion with him. As General George Washington sat as the leader of the convention, he sat in a chair that had a half of a sun. And Benjamin Franklin said to James Madison, "As I watched this convention fold," he said, "I didn't know if that was a rising sun or a setting sun. But as he watched each of the delegates sign the Constitution, he said, I now know that it is a rising sun." And then when it became Benjamin Franklin's turn to sign, he was the oldest of the delegates there, 81 years old. It said he needed help to make his way to sign the parchment. And it's recorded that as he signed his name to the Constitution of the United States of America, that Benjamin Franklin wept. Well, it is indeed that the United States was a rising sun. The United States now has over 340 million citizens. And while it's only about 4% of the world's population, it produces over a third of the world's goods and services. James Madison is known as the father of the Constitution. He also holds the title of being the shortest of the founding fathers at just 5 feet 4 inches. And he weighed 100 pounds. Although he was small in stature, he was large in spirit and instrumental to the success of the signing of the Constitution. He said this of the signing. He said, "There never was an assembly of men charged with a great and arduous trust who were more pure in their motives or more anxiously devoted to the object committed to them.
than were the members of the convention of 1787. Did the devising and proposing a constitution system to secure the permanent liberty and happiness of our country. It is impossible for the man of reflection not to perceive in it the finger of the Almighty. All right, we'll introduce our next principle. By raise of hands, who wants this $20? No, I usually get better participation on this. Who wants this $20? Come on. There we go. All right, that introduces our next principle. Action. We can all say we want the $20, but who got the $20?
Chris.
The person who acted. You know? Those members of the early colonies, they could say they wanted independence. They could say we wanted freedom. They said we want to be our own nation. But it required action to make that desire a reality. None of those noble words about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, about all men being created equal, none of that would have been worth any more than the paper it was written on had it not been for those who were fighting to make it happen. If it hadn't been for those 17,000 men who willingly gave their life in the British prison ships, for the 275 men who were hung because they wouldn't deny the cause of freedom. So sometimes we look at history and we think that that's the way it had to happen. No, we're each writing history. Had General Washington not sacrificed his life on the plantation and went to serve for 8.5 years, even after the fact, as he got involved in the war, have said, if I would have known the privation that me and my men would have had to go through, I don't know if I would have agreed to do it. But he was a man of honor, a man who was a champion of liberty and freedom, a man who was called of God. And so he persisted through those years of trial. So today, they faced decisions that would decide their destiny. Today, we are faced with decisions that will decide the destiny of the United States of America. So as I thought on that, I said, well, what can we do? I'm part of many organizations that are involved in teaching the principles of the Constitution and a lot of the Founding Fathers. When you look at a lot of the problems that we face in America and our future, what we can do comes down to education. General George Washington said this, a primary object should be the education of our youth in the science of government. In a republic, what knowledge can be as equal or as important? And what duty more pressing than communicating it to those who are to be the future generations and the future guardians of the liberties of our country? Benjamin Franklin said this, a nation of well-informed men who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved. It is in the region of ignorance that tyranny begins. Education is a better safeguard of liberty than a standing army. Thomas Jefferson said this, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free, it expects what never was and never will be. So I served as a board member on the Taylor's Crossing charter school for many years. And our charter was to develop a love of the founding fathers and founding mothers and a love of the Constitution of the United States and an understanding of the principles of freedom. So as a member of the board, I was in charge of our curriculum. Anything that was used in the school, I had to approve. I remember at one of the board meetings, someone brought in a book. And I'd usually just do it right in the board meeting. I was like, I usually can make a decision in 5 minutes. If not, I'll take it home and I'll review it. On one of these occasions, someone brought in a book. And it was a book on American history. And the teacher, and she had some other people there that were advocating for this book. It was a book that was a more modern than the books we were using and had some different tools and resources that the teacher would find helpful. So I said, okay, let me see the book. So I turned to the back index, I went, Founding Fathers. Well, first problem. There was only 3 pages in the whole book on American history that it referenced, that had references to Founding Fathers. I'm like, well, that's a red flag. I was like, well, let me flip to one of those pages. As I flipped to the first page, on the left of that page was the picture of a burning American flag. And the comment about the Founding Fathers was very derogatory. I closed the book, gave it back to the teacher, and said, this book is not approved. She asked to speak, and then her husband was there with her. He asked to speak as well. They were given permission to address the board. And he said, my wife's a great teacher. You know, she understands these principles, and she can just use this as a resource. So I was like, no. No student in this school will have a book that has a picture of a burning American flag. No one in this school will have a book that has a derogatory comment about our founding fathers. They said, well, it's about the teacher, not the text. I was like, no, it's about both. I said, if George Washington was teaching this class, I would not allow him to use this text. Well, they got that. They said, okay. Text is not approved. As part of the curriculum that I developed a series of lessons that were taught from age first grade through 12. And we taught the principles of liberty. We teach the principles of leadership. We teach the principles of character. That was also part of our charter, teaching the principles of character, teaching hard work, integrity, independence, kindness, persistence. And I put these lessons together. I now have them in a PDF. I'm happy to share them with whoever wants one. So just send me an email. My email is Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N, at Cameron, the letter C, Taylor.com. Send me an email, say I want the lessons. And I'll reply to your email with the attachment of the lesson plans that we use at the school. They're designed to be where they require little preparation. They're built around stories. That these stories are a good way for us to learn the principles of freedom. So a lot of the stories will come from Preserve, Protect, Defend, but also I have a book called 8 Attributes of Great Achievers, Volume 1 and Volume 2, that we have. So featured, like Gandhi is featured on the principle of responsibility. We also have a chapter, George Washington ends up in every single book that I've written. Everyone's like, why do you keep writing on George Washington? I was like, well, it's like, he's a great example of so many different principles, but there is a chapter in volume 2 of George Washington on servant leadership. So again, part of my mission and ministry is education. And so I also feel a call to teach the youth. So one of my books that I have is called 8 Steps to Lasting Excellence. It has many great, inspiring quotes from our founders and others. Like here's one from George Washington. If new difficulties arise, we must only put forth new exertions. So this is a book that has a lot of great quotes, pictures. I thought this would be a great book for the youth to read. There's power in reading books. So every youth here today, how many of you would like a free copy of this book? Okay, you don't have to come up and get it, but you have to get it. You have to get it. Oh, okay, there you go. You got the first one. But we have plenty of them. So back here at the table, so my wife at a table back here, so after the conference, all the youth can pick up their copy, The 8 Steps to Lasting Excellence, free, a gift from me. Send me an email, I'll send you a gift. So, and then all the other books that I have are available, $5 a book. So if you want any of my other books, this is $5 a book. Well, we have about 10 minutes left, so I'll close with one final story. This story comes from the lives of two great champions of freedom, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were a great team in the fight for independence. While Jefferson was the author of the Declaration of Independence, Adams was the chief advocate on the floor of Congress. Jefferson was the pen, and Adams was the voice of freedom. At 11 o'clock today, I'm doing a presentation here on becoming a person of influence. And in there, I'll share about the importance of developing our gift of voice and our gift with the pen to write and how that can be used as influence to be a mighty champion of liberty and principles of truth and righteousness. And I'll share a lot of other fun stories with that. But that's where you see that Jefferson and Adams have developed the voice of freedom. And Jefferson wrote of John Adams, he said this, he supported the Declaration with zeal and ability, fighting fearlessly for every word of it. He spoke with power and moved his hearers from their seats. There's power in words. Now these men had spent a lifetime in the service of their country. And in the spring of 1826, both had fallen very ill. Where they were mostly confined to bed. Thomas Jefferson was 83. John Adams was age 90. This would be the year of the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Now, in the spring of 1826, it didn't look like either of them would last till July 4th, 1826. But they each expressed a desire to see the 50th celebration. And they said, I want to breathe the air of independence on the 50th anniversary. We now come to July 3rd. Both men are still alive, but both men are now confined to bed. On July 3rd, Thomas Jefferson asked, he said, "What day is it?" The reply came, "It's July 3rd. And Jefferson replied, says, "I will live to breathe the air of Independence Day." On July 4th, Thomas Jefferson's family and friends gathered around him, and they celebrated the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Joy filled Jefferson's heart to see his children, grandchildren, and friends enjoy and celebrate the blessings of freedom. As Jefferson felt the end draw near, he said these as his final parting words. He said, "I resign myself to my God and my children to my country." At 1 p.m. on July 4th, 1826, this mighty champion of freedom returned home. Also on July 4th, 500 miles away, John Adams' life was drawing to a close. Adam laid in the bed and breathing was difficult. And it was hard for him to speak. But when he was told it was July 4th, it said he clearly answered, "It is a great day." There was a group that was having a celebration in the town where John Adams was. And they asked him for a message. So the reverend came and he said, "We want to take a message to the people from John Adams for our Independence Day celebration." Adams gave them a two-word message. He said, "Independence forever." At 6:20 on the evening of July 4th, 1826, John Adams was united with his lifelong friend and fellow patriot, Thomas Jefferson. It is recorded that at the time of John Adams' passing that there was a loud thunderclap, and that the sun had been blocked by clouds as it was ending the day, but it broke through the clouds with great splendor. Now, I don't believe that the death of these two great patriots on the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration was a coincidence. But again, another evidence of divine providence, another evidence of God's hands in the life of his people, and an evidence that we are indeed one nation under God. I will close with these final words from General George Washington, which he said to his troops on August 8, 1776, shortly after the signing of the Declaration. He said this, "We must now determine to be enslaved or free. If we make freedom our choice, we must observe it. We must obtain it by the blessings of heaven on our united and vigorous effort." As we celebrate the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, I pray that we each do our part to fulfill the dying words of John Adams, "Independence forever." Thank you.